Du lytter til Hestedølærerne. Podcasten for dig, der er dølæge eller veterinærsygeplejerske og arbejder med heste. Mit navn er Emma Thomsen. Jeg er dølæge og arbejder som konsulent for Børinger Ingelheim. I Hestedølærerne taler vi om tilstanden og sygdommen, der kan ramme heste, men vi tager også andre emner op, som er relevante for dig, der arbejder med hestesundhed. Denne podcast er lavet af Børinger Ingelheim, og med denne podcast ønsker vi at give noget tilbage til dig, der arbejder med hestesundhed. Vi ønsker at tage emner op, som er interessante og relevante for dig, og hvis du har forslag til emner, du gerne vil høre mere om, eller tips til en gæst, du gerne vil høre, så tøv ikke med at kontakte os. Mine kontaktoplysninger finder du i podcastens beskrivelse.
Welcome back to Hestedyrlägarna or Hestveterinärerna, the podcast for equine veterinarians and veterinary nurses in the Nordic countries. And in this episode, we will talk about a disease that we haven't had to bother too much about in the Nordic countries, but that we might have to think more about in the future, and that is the West Nile virus. But before we dig into that, and Louise is going to have to tell us a whole lot about the disease itself, but before we dig into that, we wanted to mention a tool that is provided online, that is provided by the Equine Infectious Disease Surveillance Organization, and the actual tool is called International Collating Center. And this is basically an online map where you can go in and check which diseases, which infectious diseases are reported in every country. Most of the countries in Europe are represented, for example. And Louise, tell me about this tool, because you discovered it also quite recently, and it's a great tool, right, for checking what's going on.
Yes, it really is. So I thought we were lacking some kind of tool that could give us a good overview of what's going on in the countries around us, because as we know, horses travel. People travel, but horses travel as well. A lot of horses travel within the European Union or other countries in the surroundings, but we also have horses traveling across the world and coming back. So borders for diseases are vanishing, and they can bring back disease to us and we can bring it to them. So as a veterinarian, I think it's very important to at least realize what's going on around the world. So not only to stay tuned about what's going on in our own neck of the woods, but also what's going on in the countries surrounding us. And this tool is a very easy tool to use. And it, as we said, it displays a lot of various diseases that occurs around in the various countries. So it's a very easy point and click system. This International Collating Center webpage, the map version they did from 2019, so that's where the information goes back to. But you can go in and you can select a time frame where you are interested. You can select a disease that you're interested in, or you can go into the actual country and ask how many different diseases are reported in that particular country for the past X number of years. Mm. So it's very easy to use. Now, one of the things that is important to realize is that all of these are based on either voluntary information from vets that are detecting diseases out there as part of their daily jobs. So normal practicing vets that come across a, for instance, influenza horse that tests positive from a validated lab, they will on a voluntary basis report this to the International Collating Center, and they will put that on the map and register that as an event occurring. But there are no official sources that check and validate the results. So it's all based on a voluntary submission. Mm-hmm. But this this organization, they also keep an eye out for other labs posting their results publicly, and then they gather all the information on this webpage. So it's a mixture of practicing vets as well as recognized labs that publish their results. Not all labs publish the results, so that's quite important to know. But you can see which labs do publish and get posted on this webpage. If you go in and click on the countries, you can see which lab has confirmed the diagnosis. Mm. So, for instance, in Sweden, it's SVA and Svensk Travsport who publish their results on a public database. In Norway and Denmark, we don't have very many reports, so we're very keen on getting more reports in there from practicing vets when they have a confirmed result. But a lot of labs are publishing in there.
So that's where you come in, the listeners of this podcast. If you encounter any infectious diseases, there is actually a place where you can report it, even if it's not mandatory in the country that you're working to report it to the authorities. You can still report it to this website and it will appear on the map. And you can reach this website by going to equinesurveillance.org/ICCview. And you can also just go to the main page, equinesurveillance.org. And there you can also read about different programs that are available. But this program provided by the International Collating Center is called the ICC View. That is the very handy map, and it's very easy to navigate. So you can get a picture of which diseases are present in your area or in your country, but also to which extent and sort of how worried you need to be about it. It's very easy to use and very informative. And it also brings us to the topic that we are talking about today, because surveillance tools like this are, of course, handy for us working with equines. But there are diseases, of course, that spreads also to humans, where it's actually in a human interest to keep track on the diseases as well. And one of those are the West Nile virus that we will be discussing a little bit today. And we'll come back to the surveillance and why it has emerged as a topic that is very hot at the moment in north of Europe. But Louise, why don't you start by telling us what is the West Nile virus and why do we need to worry about it?
The West Nile virus is a what we used to call an exotic virus appearing in Africa many years ago, and now has spread through the United States and now appearing in Europe as well. And it is a mosquito-borne virus that is feeding on birds. So the bird is the primary reservoir for the virus. Some birds are more resistant than others, and that means that you can have birds that are apparently healthy and full of the virus. Other birds are not as resistant, so you'll at the same time find certain types of birds not doing very well when they get infected, and that's why having dead birds is one of those markers for West Nile. But essentially, the mosquito needs to feed on a viremic bird, so it gets the virus inside. And then when that mosquito goes and feed on a dead-end host, which is humans or horses, those are the two species that can get sick as well, then we get sick, but we don't get viremic per se, so we can't submit the infection back to the mosquito again. So unfortunately, we just get sick and then hopefully get better. But the problem is we can get encephalitis from this virus. And that's the big, big problem with it. So you can keep the reservoir in the mosquitoes if you have the birds that are viremic. But you can also have, once you have the virus in your mosquito population, it seems like they can actually harbor the infection across generations. So from season to season, you can, once you have your virus established in your mosquito population, it can stay in the mosquito population. So that's why we're very on our toes right now to monitor whether we have this virus or not. The closest we've seen the disease on its own to the Scandinavian borders are northern part of Germany. And that's the reason for why we have gotten this disease on our radar for the past year or two now.
Mm. So just to get it completely clear,
the mosquito infects the bird, who is then reservoir for the virus, and then another mosquito can bite the bird, get the virus, and transmit it to a horse.
It actually is the bird that's the reservoir, yeah, mostly. And the bird will travel far distances, and that's why the virus can be transported via the bird. And then once that bird comes from southern parts of the Europe, for instance, and fly up here, then the mosquitoes, once it feeds on the bird, it gets the the virus inside the mosquito, and the mosquito can bite the horse or the human.
Yeah.
So it's the birds that are the big reservoir. But once you have the birds up here, the mosquitoes infected, then the mosquitoes can stay in the population in that actually region. Then it might be independent of having the birds. Okay. Then once you have the virus inside the mosquitoes, it might be that because of vertical transmission, that it can transmit the virus through the generation of the mosquito and survive the seasons. Mm. So that's the whole problem of getting the virus across our borders in the first place.
Because one way, of course, of monitoring the spread of this disease is to look at how it's spreading in the bird population. But then that might not be enough if you actually want to see how it is in your particular area, because it can stay within the sort of mosquito population.
That's at least what's suggested, that the mosquito population, once it's infected, then that can stay. And then, again, then the mosquito can transmit it to the birds, and then we have the full circle. So,
yeah.
But it comes first and foremost, it's a bird virus getting spread via a mosquito as a vector.
Yeah. And once a horse gets infected, it can't infect other horses.
No.
So that's a dead end, sort of.
It is a dead end, yes. Yeah. So it cannot multiply the virus inside. It can't get viremic enough for it to transmit it back to a mosquito, and then from horse to horse, from horse to human. Mm. That path does not exist. Mm. So this is a single horse disease. So it's not one that you should be afraid that it's contagious between horses. But of course, if one horse gets infected, it means that it got bitten by a mosquito. And those mosquitoes in that area might then be carrying the virus. Mm. So more animals can be sick, but it's not from horse to horse. It's via the mosquito.
Yeah. So this virus, what does it then do in the horse? How does it present? What are the clinical symptoms and so on of this disease?
It can be very variable. And the important thing is that you can have a horse that gets infected with the virus and show absolutely no signs. If anything, it might be slightly febrile, maybe one day, but that's it. Then you would discover, if you did take a blood sample, you'd discover some days later that it can seroconvert and test seropositive all of a sudden. And that's the only way you would know that that horse was bitten by a mosquito that had the virus. So most of the cases, and that will say more than 60 to 70% of the cases, will just be very, very low grade signs, which you would sometimes maybe not even notice. But then there is a subpopulation that unfortunately gets neurologic signs, and that's why this virus is so important. And the neurologic signs will be a horse that will be moving strangely, so ataxic. It would become weak. In some cases, it'll get muscle fasciculations or muscle tremors, particularly of the face, but also down the shoulders and neck musculature. And in the worst cases, it will become severely neurologic. So it'll become dull. The mentation definitely changes. Behavior changes. So it'll become aggressive or somnolent or something else, like clear signs of a horse that has encephalitis and fever.
Mm.
Fever, however, is not a persistent sign. We have seen West Nile horses where the fever phase is very brief. But of course, if you have a horse with fever, that's one of the signs that will guide you towards this being a viral infection.
Mm.
And those horses that become neurologic, they are maybe around 10% of the 30% that got neurologic in the first place, 10% of those will develop the encephalitis, and they will definitely require intensive care therapy, and some of them will die, unfortunately.
Mm.
And that's where whatever we can do to prevent this disease is important. So even if it is a small number of horses, vaccination in these cases are very effective.
Mm.
And that's opposite some of the other viral diseases that can give us neurologic problems where vaccination is not effective. But in the West Nile virus cases, vaccination is extremely effective.
Mm. Yeah, we'll come back to that. But if I do encounter a horse that is infected with this virus and displaying these symptoms, what's the treatment? How do I treat it?
The treatment for this disease is, again, very symptomatic. So there is no antiviral medication that has proven to be effective against West Nile virus.
Mm.
And only supportive care medication is needed in these cases. And again, most of them will be very subtle symptoms and probably not really need any care at all. But in the ataxic horses, of course, making sure that it has good footing and just supportive care, being able to eat well and so forth will be the choice of care.
Mm.
Now, the ones that get severely neurologic will probably need to end up being referred to a hospital because they will run the risk of not being able to feed on their own. They will have high fevers or other problems that needs more intensive care therapy, and that could be a variety of things, including intravenous fluids. For a period of time, and with good supportive care, they might recover, but due to the risk of fatalities in this case, prevention is key.
Mm. You've worked in Florida and obviously seen quite a lot of more, as we used to call them, exotic diseases than we see here in the Nordic countries. But I'm guessing then you've seen a few horses that maybe someone who has only been working in the Nordics hasn't. How common would you say it is that you get this really severe neurological symptoms and that it has to be hospitalized and so on? How big share of the horses will be affected by that?
Well, as far as we know, it's going to be about 10% of the total population that gets infected will develop severe neurological signs. And with severe neurological signs, I mean the encephalitis versions of them.
Yeah.
So it can be a quite a large portion. Now it can change between the countries. So these can change depending on whether you're in Florida or France or Germany. But the overall sense is that about 10% run the risk of having a severe neurologic signs, encephalitis signs.
Mm.
So that is a portion that's worth making sure that we decrease as much as possible.
Mm.
And again, the vaccination strategies are extremely important because it's such an effective vaccine. And the more we vaccinate, the rarer we see these severe neurologic cases.
Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of that, I mean, this vaccine is currently not marketed and sold in the Nordic countries, simply because there hasn't been a need for it. We haven't had this disease. And we still don't, we should add. I mean, there still has not been a reported case that has been from the Nordic countries that has not traveled.
No.
So we are still sort of safe. But looking at these different kinds of surveillance tools again, we could see that last year we had a dramatic increase of cases in Germany,
yeah,
where they have been concentrated to east and north of Germany. And actually some cases reported not too far from the Danish border, which means that it's probably a matter of time before we see the disease in the Nordic countries as well. When you look in your crystal ball, that I know that every internal medicine specialist has, what do you think? How long before we can actually see the first cases of this disease in the Nordic countries?
Yeah, that's a hard question because what we saw in Germany, they've had West Nile virus for a while, for some years, but it's been very static. So the case reporting of equine cases for the past many years from 2020 up to 2023, it was very stable, and probably, I think, 30, maybe 40 cases per year. That's it. Mm. And that's even a high level, which is all through Germany. But then something happened here in 24, and they reached about 177 confirmed cases of equine West Nile fever. Mm. And that's a remarkable jump. So something's happening with the spread of that virus. So I would say that at least for the countries that have the borders to Germany, which is Denmark, you should be on your toes, because I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some indication that we could start seeing that virus in Denmark for the next maybe year or two. Mm. But I think it would be safe to say that we should learn to recognize the signs for sure.
Yeah.
And debate whether this should be a vaccination strategy that we should recommend, and I know some vets have started recommending vaccinating their horses in those particular areas.
Mm.
For the virus to spread up to Norway and Sweden, time will tell. We don't have any indication of that happening at the moment, but I think in Denmark you definitely should be on your toes and learn to recognize these signs, which is ataxia, muscle fasciculations, and maybe fever. Mm. And then the more overt signs of encephalitis would be horses that definitely changed mentation, plus minus being ataxic or wobbly or weak, etc. Mm. Yeah.
So the vaccine that you can use, as I said, it's not available or marketed in the Nordic countries, but there are different options for veterinarians to import vaccines from other countries on a license. And I'm sure that your pharmacy or your where you usually buy your medications have some sort of system set up for that. So it's something that you might want to investigate if need be. So if I do have a suspicion that I've actually encountered a West Nile virus case, how do I confirm this diagnosis?
So confirmation is by blood work. So you pull blood work and submit it for an IgM capture ELISA or IgM serology. The thing is, with acute infection of these viral diseases, they produce immunoglobulin M. And that's a pretty firm indicator of acute disease. So for this disease, it's fairly easy to diagnose that this is actually what's causing your problem. IgM disappears slowly over a couple of months. So it'll only be increased in the acute cases. So if you have a horse showing symptoms with a high IgM, you have your diagnosis right there. If you vaccinate a horse, so if you come across a horse that's vaccinated, it's mostly IgG that's increased. So that's how you differentiate between whether it's an acute infection or it's a vaccinated horse, and it's just a seropositive horse due to vaccination. So IgM versus IgG is important.
Mm. So this is a zoonosis, which means it will affect both animals and humans. And in the case of humans, it's the same route for the virus to infect us as it is to the horses, that we get bitten by a mosquito that transferred the virus to us. But if we'd then have an area where we have seen some cases among horses, how worried should we be as people to encounter this virus and get sick from it?
You should not be extremely worried, but it is a marker of how intense the infection is in that particular area and your risk as a human, because horses are much more sensitive for the virus than humans are. So that means that if we monitor the equine diseases, it gives you a relative risk for the humans as well. So if you do have a horse that's sick in one area, you know the virus is there. And if the virus is there, there's also a risk for you as a human. So anything you can do as a prevention, making sure to have mosquito sprays, don't be in areas with a high mosquito load. because that would increase your risk at coming into contact with this virus because it is a zoonosis. Luckily, it's rare that people do get encephalitis, but it does occur. So it's a real risk, although not as high as in the horse.
Mm. And there's no vaccination for people. The only vaccine available is for horses.
That is correct. Yeah.
But we do have a really good mosquito spray that's called Centaura that is sold in the Nordic countries. Just as a side note, if you would ever encounter a situation where you want to protect yourself from mosquitoes. So the West Nile virus, as we heard initially, it's part of a family of many other viruses that could potentially affect horses. Which other viruses in this family do I need to sort of know something about as an equine vet?
Yeah, very few, fortunately, but it is in the family of flavivirus, and that contains West Nile virus, as we talked about, Usuvi virus as well, and that one is more of a bird virus too, coming on the mosquitoes, through the mosquitoes. But then some of these viruses actually go through ticks as well, and we know tick-borne diseases can be a problem for horses as well. One of those are the looping ill virus. It's very rare to see any problems in horses. And then the tick-borne encephalitis virus as well, also very rare reported at giving any symptoms in horses. They seroconvert, but very rarely do they give any disease in the horse. So, but obviously they do carry other pathogens like anaplasma and so forth. Borrelia is a problem as well. But when it comes to viruses, it's the looping ill virus and the tick-borne encephalitis virus.
Thanks, Louise, for informing us about these diseases and especially the West Nile fever, which we should really keep a lookout for in the future. If you who are listening to this podcast want to read more about the situation with equine West Nile fever in Denmark, the Danish Veterinary and Food Administration is performing risk evaluations, which they have published on their website. And in Sweden and Norway, you can find information on the websites of SVA and Mattilsynet, respectively. Please also note that West Nile fever in horses is a notifiable disease in all Scandinavian countries. So if you encounter a case, you have to report it to the authorities. At Boehringer Ingelheim, we are following the development of infectious diseases in horses, and you can look forward to coming episodes on relevant topics also in the future. But for now, thank you for listening.
Tak fordi du lyttede med til Hestedyrlærerne. Hvis du kan lide det, du hører, så læg en anmeldelse i din podcast-app, og glem ikke at fortælle dine kolleger om podcasten. Vi er snart tilbage med et nyt spændende afsnit af Hestedyrlærerne.